Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to The Local Lens, a podcast where we go inside one community's experience with a drug epidemic. Our show is coming to you from Stanton, Kentucky, a small town in eastern Kentucky nestled at the foothills of Appalachia. So what we're doing with this show is we're trying to gather as many different perspectives on the drug crisis as possible, and we're doing that through having very honest and intentional conversations and interviews with people who have unique perspectives on the issue. And for this episode, we were lucky enough to be joined by Mr. Bill Helton. And this is actually the second episode that we've done with Bill. A few weeks ago, we released one with Bill where he just told his story from beginning to end. And his story is incredible. He has a 30-year history battling drug addiction. But at the time that we had recorded this interview, he had begun working as a peer support specialist at Stanton Family Clinic. So we recorded the episode in the summer of 2020. So this episode goes into what his experience was like in that role, especially with COVID affecting how things work. Well, anyways, let's go on and get into the episode. This is a Powell County Cares project, The Local Lens. I'm your host, Nate Brooks. Let's go on and get into it. So, Bill, if you'd like to just tell us real quickly who you are, where you're from, just introduce yourself.
All right, my name is Bill Helton. I'm from Hazard. I was born and raised in Hazard. I'm 49 years old. When I was 48, I moved to Menifee County, to Frenchburg. Since then, the past couple weeks, I've moved to live in Clay City.
Okay.
I was born in an all-American family in Hazard. My parents, my brother and sister, never used drugs whatsoever. Good, honest, hardworking people. I ended up when I was in my mid-20s, getting mixed up with the wrong crowd. Poor associations led me down a road that I have some regrets about, but for the most part, I find something positive from that.
Yeah, and that was from like November of 2018?
Yes.
Like halfway through 2019?
To July, actually yesterday made 1 year to the day.
Wow.
Since I left the Moorhead Inspiration Center.
Congratulations, man.
Yes, sir. Yeah. So, but it was actually a blessing that someone called in on me.
Mm-hmm.
It really was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you were at Moorhead's Treatment Center, and then you left a year ago now, and you said you started at the family clinic the next January?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It was almost 6 months after I left treatment that I ended up with a job in peer support. Once I completed treatment at Moorhead, I started researching. I've wanted to work in recovery. I knew that I found out that the more I'm around recovery and recovering addicts, the better I do. Like, I really thrive in treatment centers.
Okay.
Where there's discipline and accountability, mm-hmm. and so forth, and honesty and integrity is emphasized on a daily basis. And I thought, if I could just create an environment that was somewhat like treatment, mm-hmm. how far could I go with this, and how long could I stay clean and sober? And so I was applying for jobs at treatment centers, and I found that they wanted certified peer support specialists, which is kind of a new position that's being created.
Mm-hmm.
What a peer support specialist does is they use their lived experience to help guide others. For example, there's basically nothing that a patient or a client can't share with me that I haven't been through, and
okay.
I can explain to them how I got through it. And I don't mean they have to take that route, but it just offers hope that if I did it, they can too.
So what is the general response to that? Like when people come through the door and they're meeting you for the first time, and you have that, like, you share what you've done to, and like kind of how you got over some of those humps. Are people accepting of that?
It's very promising to people.
Okay.
I try to get it out as quickly as possible to make them feel more comfortable that, look, what you're going through right now, you think that's bad? I guarantee you I've been through worse than what you've been through. I've been homeless. I've been in jail. I've had 2 state prison sentences for trafficking in controlled substance, which I'm not proud of, but it's part of my past. it's like I try to paint the darkest picture of myself, and I don't have to try really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. I try to paint the darkest picture of myself I can to make their picture seem brighter. Mm-hmm. And the response is amazing. And I'll go a step further and say that most of the patients here, if not all, that I've actually dealt with, they prefer to see me over a therapist, mm-hmm. A licensed therapist. And of course, the peer support here at this particular clinic is not required, it's elective. The mm-hmm. counseling is required. But I think if the patients had it their way, they would prefer to see peer support over mm-hmm. over counseling, which they need both. I'm not saying that it should be that way. I'm just saying that they can relate to me better. They don't feel inferior to me. I make sure they don't. I go out of my way to make sure that they don't feel less than me. And they're not. They're not mm-hmm. less than me. And I emphasize during the group sessions that we have that it's we, it's us, it's not you all, mm-hmm. me. It's like I need this as much as you do. Mm-hmm. And it really does help me as much as it does them.
Yeah, that's incredible. And like, congratulations on finding a job that lets you stay in that environment too. That's one thing when I've talked to other people that are like either in recovery now or like been in recovery for a few years, they say that keeping that community is just endlessly important to staying on the right path of that. And that's a big thing that COVID has hurt a lot of people with. Yes. Like, it's kept people apart more. So that's, you have any thoughts on that at all?
I do. I tell you, it was the worst news I have had at this job, or any job for that matter, when the day that they informed me that we will no longer be allowing patients into the building due to the COVID-19 mm-hmm. pandemic. So I had to call my patients, or some of them, I just waited till they came in because I knew they'd be in a couple of days for regular appointments, but they were seeing everyone out back at that point. So basically my role changed. I was still peer support specialist, obviously, but I was sitting out front to do all the coronavirus screens, mm-hmm. Taking temperatures and asking questions. And there was a 2-month period where literally everyone went around back whether they had symptoms or not. We were allowed no gatherings in this building. Mm-hmm. And so that basically did away with the group sessions that were, they were becoming very successful and growing in numbers. Mm-hmm. People were looking forward to them and coming on a voluntary basis on their own time, in addition to all the requirements that they already had here with counseling, random drug testing, random pill counts, and their appointment with their providers. Mm-hmm. Some of these people were literally, at risk of losing jobs and everything due to those requirements, but mm-hmm. they made time to get to the group sessions, mm-hmm. And they didn't have to be here.
I think that speaks a lot to, like what we could start looking more towards in providing treatment to more people, I think. Just like if the people that are receiving the treatment look forward to like group efforts and stuff like that. I know I've talked to people that work at the jail program too that say like when people are together, when those guys in the jail are together like working toward it as a cohesive unit, then like everybody seems to get into it more.
Yes, that is true. Mm-hmm. And I feared that the isolation that this pandemic was forcing on people would be damaging to some of the patient's recovery. And isolation is very dangerous place to be as a recovering addict, because mm-hmm. because you do need support. You do need a shoulder to lean on, someone to talk to. So what I did was I took it upon myself, and this was also highly suggested by the core grant that I work under. We have a weekly conference call on Mondays, and we update one another. There's like 13 of us that attend this mm-hmm. conference call. It's at 2:30 every Monday, and we would give updates on contact with our clients and how we were going about that. And so we had Zoom meeting options that we ended up not doing that here, because people just don't feel comfortable on camera mm-hmm. sometimes. They may be at home and background noise and so forth, and it's hard to have a private setting. But mm-hmm. I would text and call these people daily, and still yet to write, even till now I do this.
Some of the people that like would have normally been coming in for sessions.
Yes, the people that were very let down by this. They were devastated. A few mm-hmm. were really devastated by it. And so I made sure that I contacted them daily and checked on them. Is there anything you need? Are there any resources I can assist you with? And I made a resource packet. I took it upon myself, and actually okay. worked a lot at in my free time at home on this.
Really?
And came up with resources in Powell, Estill, Montgomery counties, mm-hmm. basically all the surrounding counties. And actually ended up helping a few people with some of those resources. But the thing is, my heart was so into these patients that I went out of my way to make a detailed resource packet for housing assistance, mm-hmm. food assistance, any kind of financial assistance, or even things as simple as, like there was a bonus offered on the EBT program, which is food stamps, that a lot of people didn't know about and wouldn't have known about otherwise if I hadn't brought it to their attention. Mm-hmm. They gave like $50 extra on, like, when this pandemic first began.
Yeah.
It's just a real blessing to help someone.
Yeah.
But the isolation was, the risk of isolation was real at that time. It still is. Mm-hmm. Actually, this pandemic has not gotten any better. I think yesterday I had the worst, shattered the one-day record for new cases in the state of Kentucky. So I don't see this ending anytime soon.
Mr. Bill, you're a wizard. Here we are on March 4th of 2021, a full 9 months after that, and we're still dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic. But we're getting closer. Fingers crossed.
So with that resource list, too, were a lot of the places that you were putting on the list, did you have experience using those same places or similar?
I did have experience using some. I've actually, with the housing assistance, I've used it before. Mm-hmm. I used it in Perry County many years ago. Some of the things that I, the resource packets I made, I didn't have experience with, but I researched and how to go about obtaining these resources and mm-hmm. Relayed to the patients what they need to do if they need this. Like one guy even just needed like his wheelchair got run over in his driveway. Someone turned in his driveway. He lives right beside 213 out there. Mm-hmm. And someone just pulled in the turn and ran over his wheelchair.
Wow.
And he's crippled. He can walk like 10 feet, and that's as far as he can walk. Mm-hmm. And so he was completely immobile without a wheelchair, and I got him a wheelchair.
Nice.
Ended up locating him a wheelchair. That was, of course, I didn't have a resource packet for wheelchairs. That was a completely separate resource that I located in that situation, though, just for him.
Yeah. So it seems to me like it's just super important to have people like you in your position that, like, you've been through it, you know. You know, like, you can really relate to, like, people that are addicted than most other people could. That's pretty awesome. So
that's what it's about. It's about support. It's supporting one another. I'm not really there to give advice. And there's like the five commandments of peer support that I learned in treatment, or I don't know if I can call all five verbatim, but I know: do not judge, do not give advice, you're not sponsoring them. There are sponsors in Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and other 12-step programs, but you're not there to judge or give advice or to criticize others. You're basically, you're there for support is the bottom line. You're there to use your lived experience and what you've been through as a guiding light for them.
Okay. Which that's really cool. So like when you're talking to somebody, then sharing your experience, it's not an advice. It's not coming from like, you should do this. Like I did this and it worked for me.
Right. You tell what you, exactly like you just said. Mm-hmm. I was in the situation you're in at one time. Here's a good example. A guy was losing his mother, and it was devastating. Well, I've not lost my mother, but I lost my father. Mm-hmm. So I used that lived experience. I was about the same point of my recovery at the time that I lost my father as he was when he lost his mother. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to get high so bad he couldn't stand it. Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to get so high so bad I couldn't stand it when I lost my father. And I was literally 14 days from completion of the first program I told you about, Hickory Hill, and having to leave there on a 48-hour pass and go to my dad's visitation and funeral and to deal with that, to see my mother and sister and brother devastated. And just to explain to them how that I got through it, and not to push that suggestion on them, but of course I was in treatment, I had to return to treatment, but still the bottom line, I had a choice not to, so I could have stayed gone from treatment, you know, I was on a 48-hour pass. But what I did is I attended extra meetings, and I leaned on the support of others, and I shared that with them. And once I left treatment 14 days later, then the reality of I don't have my dad anymore really set in. And that's where that I really had to use a practical application in the real world. Okay, you just lost your dad. How you? By the way, my dad and me were super close. I'm close with all my family, but nothing compares to the bond I had with him.
Yeah.
So once I completed treatment on the 19th, I lost my dad on the 5th of March, 18. You know, I had to face life with my dad gone, and never to return. And how did I, you know, from that, like that day that I left treatment, I wanted to get high so bad and numb that pain. And but rather than do that, I went to extra meetings, as many meetings as I could, AA, NA. I called people. I used my sponsor daily, sometimes multiple times a day. And so all I could do was share that with them, with this particular patient, and let him know that, look, I ended up relapsing 8 months later. It was not due to my dad passing away. So it's just things like of that nature.
Thanks for sharing that. That's tough for you. Let's see. I have one, like, just a word question.
Yeah.
You said that you had a sponsor a few times, and you're not there to be anybody else's sponsor. Right. Can you tell us exactly what the sponsor is in that?
Yeah, a sponsor is someone that the actual definition of a sponsor is just he's there to guide you through the 12-step process.
Okay.
That's what he's really there to do.
Okay.
Now, the sponsor will hold you accountable. He'll be tough on you. He will, if he's a good sponsor, he will be. Now, I am allowed to sponsor people, just not patients that I work with. It's in the code of ethics. I don't sponsor patients, but I can sponsor other people.
Yeah.
A sponsor, if they see you lagging in your recovery, if they see that you're not going to enough meetings, you know, fresh out of a treatment, you should go to 2 or 3 a week, bare minimum. If he sees that I'm just coming to one every 2 weeks, he's going to get on me over it.
Okay.
He's going to want to know why I'm not there and what I'm doing. And he's not trying to tell me what to do or boss me, but he's not getting paid to do this. This is on his own time. He's spending time with a sponsor spends time with the recovering addict from the heart. Because they guide them through the 12 steps, and they actually do. There are actually some programs that have written step guides that the sponsor will give them copies of, give their sponsee, patients, but they give their sponsee a copy of a, it'd be like maybe like 70 questions, for example, for just one step.
Okay.
And you, he just guides you through the 12 steps. And like step one, the spiritual principle behind step one is honesty. If you can't get honest with yourself and admit that you're an addict, then you have no chance of recovering. Then step two, I won't even go into what the steps are, but the spiritual principle behind step two is hope. If you get honest, then you have hope that you can recover.
Okay.
And step three, the spiritual principle behind it is faith. You know, you put faith in something other than yourself. You choose a higher power. It can be, it happens to be God that the Bible speaks of, but some people don't choose that same higher power. They still have a right to be clean and sober. And it goes on and on and on to where, you know, you have to have, there's willingness along the way, there's humility along the way. Those are some of the other principles behind certain steps. The spiritual principles are something I became very fascinated with in treatment. And there are other spiritual principles other than the 12, obviously, that are behind the steps. And there are more than one that apply to each step as well. But there are certain ones that in the recovery centers in Kentucky, and I'm sure nationwide, that they like honesty is known as the spiritual principle behind step one, although there are other principles behind that step, yep. including acceptance would be another one. And so you have multiple spiritual principles behind each step. But what I was going to say is I became very fascinated with the principles and actually broke them down and studied what each one means. So mm-hmm. that I thought if I know what this is, then I know how to better apply it to my life. And so.
Yeah. So was that the drive to go further? Like, what was the attraction to figuring out all the spiritual principles? Was that it, so you could just better grasp it?
It was. I wanted to. I just knew that. And first of all, let me say that spiritual and religious are two different things. So it's not religious principles that I'm speaking of. Mm-hmm. It can be if you want it to be. It's up to each individual person. But I was just really intrigued. I thought the more spiritual principles I can apply to my life, the better person I will be. Mm-hmm. Whether it's kindness, gratitude, service to others. I mean, all those are spiritual principles. Any kind of principle you can apply to your life that promotes goodness, kindness, sacrifice to others has to make you a better, more selfless person. Mm-hmm. As addicts, we're very selfish. We're very dishonest when we're living in active addiction. We'll lie to our mom and dad's face, to our girlfriend's or wife's face, to our kids' face. We'll take from our own kids. And it's sad to say, we will take from our own people that love us the most. We will hurt them more than anyone else to support our addiction. Mm-hmm. And that's the very opposite of applying spiritual principles. So it's like you reverse that trend. Instead of applying these basically evil principles in your life, you're suddenly trying to apply good principles to your life.
So your role in addressing the whole opioid problem, it puts you in a really unique situation to see what it is that actually helps people. If you could give some words to people that also want to be helpful towards the situation, like, but don't really even know what they can do, could you, like, man, I'm not sure exactly how to ask this, but like, so somebody that's completely uninvolved from the whole addiction world, how do you think we start changing the whole approach to fixing this problem?
Empathy and understanding the disease of addiction better. What more people can do is just do more research and try to understand that, like, for example, an addict that steals off their, let's say that an addict steals off their mom, gets in her purse and steals money or credit card or whatever it might be, or runs off with the TV in the middle of the night and sells it for heroin or whatever. It's hard to believe that that person can actually love their mother and do that, but they can. Mm-hmm. They like so many people, everyone that I know of actually that's lived in active addiction hurts the ones they love the most. And what they need is treatment. There needs to be better treatment options for people. There needs to be less waiting time to get into treatment. And if someone is wanting to go to treatment tomorrow or today, even, they shouldn't have to wait 2 months on a waiting list. I don't know. What people can do is just to try to develop a better understanding of it. And unfortunately, the only way to develop a full understanding of it is to live it, and I don't wish that on anyone that hasn't. But just try to see it from the other side. Try to sit down with an addict sometime who's in active addiction when they're not when they're freshly high off of heroin or something of that nature, but just sit down and talk to them and see if by the end of the conversation you'll find that addicts are some of the best people in the world. They just need help. They need treatment, and there needs to be better treatment options.
Well, goodness gracious. Ladies and gentlemen, that is Bill Helton, and I cannot tell you how important it was for me personally to have this conversation with Bill. We had the conversation once again back in the summer of 2020, right when I was just getting started working for the health department, and it helped me so much, and I hope it helped you guys as well. Well, anyways, that's all the time that we have on the show today. I would like to thank first and foremost Mr. Bill Helton for coming on the show and being just purely honest with us and giving us that insight that really not many other people have similar experiences as you. So thank you so much for sharing that. Also, I'd like to thank WSKV for broadcasting the show. And thanks as well to the Powell County Health Department for getting the show started and for letting it even exist at all. And also a new thank you to Northeast Kentucky Rio. It's a rural health group that is now sponsoring the show as well and putting us on all the streaming services. So thank you to all of you guys that helped make this a possibility. This has been The Local Lens, a Powell County Cares production. I'm your host, Nate Brooks. These are our people using our voices, telling our stories, because no one sees it like we do. Thanks for listening, guys.